You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, we're talking with Gavin Wade. He's based in London and Birmingham, and he's an artist curator talking to us from there. Gavin, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Hi, thanks for inviting me along.
So Gavin, to begin with, I want to talk about your work as an artist and how that influences your work, and as a curator rather, and how as an artist curator that's both, you know, influencing one another. So perhaps we should begin with your work, but also how your work was instrumental, or the process that began Birmingham Projects in the context of your work.
Yeah, okay. It's I guess it's been a fairly long and quite organic process. But after I curated my first exhibition in 1996, and at that point, I think there was a sense that I had a separate practice as a maker, as someone who made a set of objects that might be seen as painting or as architecture or as sculpture. And then, but even only within a year after that, from 97, I curated a show called Low Maintenance and High Precision. And within that exhibition, I made my first, what I thought of as curatorial structures, but I thought of them as still as me being the author of those structures, and I invited other artists to perform works around those structures. And that felt like a real breakthrough in terms of a practice. And after that, the idea of an individual artist practice began to fall away, and it became more of a collaboration. And I found myself being excited by a number of collaborations, so becoming like a serial collaborator in a way, and finding that the work that I was producing was satisfying what you might call a curating practice, that I was putting together exhibitions and was working with artists to develop their works often, but there was a little bit perhaps more engagement that might be seen as a standard curating relationship. So, and then other times it was very much a full-on collaboration. So, but the idea of what I was making was actually, and still is, quite a varied feast of activity. At the core of it might be a type of support structure system, and I started a project called Support Structure in 2003 with the artist and architect Celine Condorelli, and that was really to explore this idea that I was interested in art as a support system and architecture as a support system, and we tried to develop works that offered support to individuals, to communities, and to other types of institutions, and I'm still really interested in that idea.
By the term support, you're talking about social support. You're talking about works that contribute. I mean, or could you just define what you mean a little bit by that support in the context of the projects?
It's a mixture of structural support sometimes. So the idea of a way of displaying and presenting and providing a platform for others, but then also a social support that it may examine and try to affect a situation that a community are dependent upon. So it tries to locate a brief that the artwork might solve. There might be a problem there, and it may be to solve that. So it might be to say, is this space a useful space for the exhibition of art? And then I might propose an answer to that question. And it might be to say that this space is not a useful space for art, to propose a different function for that space. Or it might be to think of the way that people use an entire university campus and to offer a new solution for how they could navigate that campus. So it's actually to support the interrelationships between people in that case. But it means that in working on a university campus and developing an individual artwork, which plays on the idea of being a curatorial structure, we develop a methodology. So it may not be that the thing that we produce is the thing that gets replicated. It may be the methodology that gets replicated, and still we offer support in a new situation, apply the same methodology, come up with a completely different result. So it's a very open process.
And that's also quite an evolution from when you first curated that show that, you know, brought in, you know, this idea of a social dynamic to creating something that's,
yeah.
I mean, that's almost institutional support that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
That sounds like on a very basic level, structural, as you said, as opposed
yeah.
to a collaboration, which I tend to think of as not nearly as deep-rooted. It means working with another artist to develop an idea that's presented, that's consumed, but you're talking more about operational construction almost.
Yes, I think so, yeah. I've been really interested. I mean, even early on, after I started making structures for other artists, I was interested in ideas of city building, of house building, of types of utopias. And I made a number of exhibitions and artworks around ideas of utopia and all the different elements that you might need to bring together to construct something that could be a type of model living. And I guess I've tried to pursue that in as many ways as possible, as both artist and curator at the same time, and with
By that idea, you mean that you. Utopias that you just mentioned, that you were also building at one time, these kind of representations of utopia. You're saying that kind of model, because that's interesting. That does sort of sit between a kind of simple collaboration between performers, visual artists, and also something that's even beyond just community interaction. We're talking about community structure again and building one. So maybe talk about one of those first utopic experiments or collaborations that you mentioned, and then we'll talk about Birmingham projects, perhaps in that context, because they sound related.
Yeah, that sounds good. I made an exhibition across the village of Bourneville in 1999, and Bourneville is famous within the UK because it was established by the Cadbury Chocolate Company, and he built what he calls the factory in a garden. So he created a new village around a very large factory, and they were Quakers, and he tried to develop the village around the factory as a new model of how to build and develop society and change the conditions for workers and change the relationships between the trading and the manufacturing and the education of the people all working together. So it was a very broad attempt to look at the houses and the positioning of the houses across a village, and how large the gardens were and what vegetables you would grow, and then also learning a broad education that included very much an art education within that. So there was an art school as part of that building. And I worked with another artist curator called Nigel Prince, and we curated a show across the whole of the village. And in a way, it was a slightly more straight type of curating that was involved in that, partly because of the scale. And there were 28 artists, from people like Dan Graham and Lawrence Wiener, through to younger artists in Glasgow at the time, like Nathan Coley and Richard Wright and Jackie Donaghy and Martin Boyce. And they all responded to the site of Bourneville, because it was it still is this very fascinating place that has been partly maintained as it was. So it still has a sense of difference. It's an interesting utopia because it has its obvious limitations there, but it still has actual rules of how the village works that are different to anywhere else in the country. For example, you cannot buy alcohol anywhere within Bourneville. And I find that really fascinating, that it tends towards being a utopia with the idea of difference rather than what you might think of some kind of uniformity, so that everyone has the same availability to do something or the same freedom. It has actually has some restrictions which make it seem quite special. So,
well, there's also, is it also functioning as a Quaker community? I mean, Quakers also have a kind of, I don't know a lot about them, but I've been to some Quaker meetings, and this idea of, you know, not being an altar and something much more community-based and silence. And that also sounds,
yes,
you know, utopic when I think about it.
It still underpins the village in a way, and that allows for that difference. Even though it's a fairly multicultural site, and it has become a very nice place to live, so it's quite middle class and very well maintained and has good schools, is very well looked after. So it still has an element of this perfection about it in some ways, because it tries to not allow its buildings to be changed that much over time. So it's a curious one. To some people, it's really horrific because it's so over-maintained. So some people would think of it as the opposite of utopia, think of it as a real nightmare place. But a really fascinating place to invite artists to and explore. And it was artists who were looking at art and architecture and design across the village and responding to the history of that site. Yeah.
Sure, very interesting. I'm sorry, go on. And then I want to bridge that to Birmingham, you know, the project.
Yeah, so that
now
led, that preceded the sequence of projects. One of them was the support structure project that started in 2003. Another was working with artists Simon and Tom Blore, who are based in Birmingham also, and we started a project of rebuilding the Russian architects' buildings, Bertold Lebetkin. We rebuilt a number of his kiosks that he made for a zoo in Dudley, and they're built in the constructivist style. So Lebetkin was trained by the constructivists and then moved across Europe to England in the 1930s, and he built this zoo in 1938, and it's a very radical experiment with concrete architecture. And that was one of the other projects. So I started remaking this architecture, and we built a version of the kiosk in the center of Bregenz in Austria, built one in Amsterdam, built one in the Venice Biennale in 2007. So that was another thing where we're looking at trying to re-exploit and change the function of radical utopian architecture, but was actually built by Lebetkin to house animals and control animals. So there's this sort of glitch in the idea of the perfection of the architecture. And then I was also working with they were becoming like my key collaborators around that time from 2003 to 2006.
And let me ask one more thing about that the aspect of that then. So that's a fantastic, fantastic project and so interesting to bring around the world too. And how was that whole thing, just to ask the one step back in structure, how is this all funded? That seemed that is something like that in the United States would be difficult to tour and fund without private funding or a lot of grants. Is that how this was supported?
Yes,
because it's
very much different models of public funding. So when even the Bourneville exhibition, which was called In the Midst of Things in 1999, that was funded by the university in Birmingham, which at the time was called University of Central England. It's now called Birmingham City University, and I still work with them and collaborate with them. And it was funded by Arts Council England and by Henry Moore Foundation, in a very small part by the Bourneville Village Trust. So very much public funding. And then even later on, my collaboration...
That's a lot of funding to pull together. Were you pulling together all that funding? Who were you? Because you only had a few collaborators,
yes.
So you organized all
that
as well.
Me and Nigel Prince. So I think early on, in the very first shows, when I was living in London and I did small shows in London, there was hardly any money. Everything was done really just with the goodwill of everyone involved. And then I started to work out how to use various systems around, including Arts Council England and the university model. So I had a research fellowship at the University of Wolverhampton, and that was really the first time where, as an artist curator, I didn't have to go and do any other work. I didn't have to work on a building site, which I used to do, and I didn't have to work in offices which I did. So it was the first time where I was paid a full-time wage by the university, but it was an entirely open, free process. So I just did my projects, even though I was being paid as a research fellow. And then when I moved back to Birmingham in 2004, I had a new research fellowship at Birmingham City University, and that was the same sort of situation where I was paid a full-time wage, but I could do whatever I wanted. And then I connected those projects back up and brought people to Birmingham and connected into the university and connected internationally. So I was very much supported by universities and by Arts Council England. And then in between, there were also some bits of commercial activity and working with other types of galleries. And the collaboration with Celine, a support structure, that was funded by the RSA in London. And they had an award called the Art for Architecture Award. And it supported artists to work with architects. And I think it was an amazing award. So it wasn't huge amounts of money, but at the time, I had a £9,000 grant from RSA to collaborate with Celine. And that really helped in that year when I didn't have a fellowship. That helped to support my practice and allowed me to still experiment and develop new ideas. So that probably gives you a bit of a sense of the range of how all those projects could come together.
It does. And then the current, to kind of close and move towards what's happening right now, the current yes. Birmingham work and activity is what? What's the project that's being produced now?
Yeah, so that is, it's called East Side Projects, and it started in 2008. So it came out of a period of about 5 years where I was collaborating with a number of other artists and curators and architects. And the other two who I haven't mentioned, one is Ruth Claxton, and she's a sculptor based in Birmingham, and I curated two exhibitions with her prior to East Side Projects, and I shared an office with her at the university. And she's a really interesting artist, but also a very good organizer and a very sort of pragmatic visionary, I think. And that really connected with my own idea of believing in myself as having visions of how things could be in the future, how things could be changed. So we worked together very well. And then the sixth person is James Langdon, and he's a graphic designer. And I started making books with James in 2005 and started working with him and produced a number of projects. For example, my Strategic Questions project, which is an ongoing curatorial structure to make 40 artworks as 40 books answering 40 questions written by Buckminster Fuller. And he designed a number of them with me. And I felt that I really collaborated with him on the design. So in 2008... there was this chance to make a new organization in Birmingham, a new type of a gallery. And that was because of my work at the university, linking with Arts Council. And Arts Council England were making noises that they wanted to support a new gallery to happen in Birmingham, a new artist-run gallery, in collaboration with the university. And so I proposed to them a structure that called East Side Projects, a completely new institution that would be an attempt to develop a new model of what a gallery could be. And it would be run by the six of us. The six of us would become the company directors, and we created a new company, a not-for-profit company. And we opened that in this in an old industrial space that's about 100 years old. And it was originally a cabinet maker's, and it's in the east side of Birmingham city centre. And it's right next to the original river that comes into the center of Birmingham, the River Ray. And it's a very elegant, well-proportioned, really interesting concrete bunker of a gallery. And myself and Celine had some funding from Arts Council to renovate that building. So it was a very luxurious situation where we were given a very modest amount of money, but we knew that we had £100,000 per year for 3 years to run a new type of organization in the city center. And we just thought, I was used to doing a lot with very little, and I thought I could make a lot of things happen with £100,000. And so we started on that basis and established East Side Projects as an artist-run gallery which would be a public gallery for the world, and try to make it a sort of new challenge of what an artist-run space could be, and try to very clearly be strategic and offer a strategy of what an artist-run space could be, and show precedents that we were interested in, show references and histories, and try and develop a new model out of important histories.
And currently with Eastside Projects, how do you collaborate or reach out to other curators, artists, and maybe collectors, out there? Is there a way that people, is there calls at all that go out, or is it one-on-one collaborations? Can you just explain that process for those that may be listening and even interested in thinking, this sounds so cool, whether they're curators in Brazil or artists in, America?
Yeah, I think at the moment, the current exhibition is called Display Show, and it's curated by myself and Celine and James. And we did a version of it. We were invited by Temple Bar Gallery in Dublin to curate a show with them. And so I made a version of the show out in Dublin first. And that also partly responded to the fact that organization, they want to change the whole ground floor of their building. They don't think it works very well. And they asked me to propose a new way of using that whole ground floor space, which is feels a very natural thing to do from out of my practice, to be able to look at how the flow works and alter the building. So within the exhibition itself, part of the curatorial system and structure and organization of it was to present the works and make works which showed how to cut up the building and make the new flow through that space, and how that would display all of the functions of the organization of Temple Bar Gallery. And so in that case, Eastside Projects, we're paid to do that job for them, and they also invest in producing the artwork, putting money into production for the artwork. And then we do a version of that at Eastside Projects, which is on right now. And then that in January, it goes out to Strom Den Haag in Holland. And we do a third version out there. So, and there are elements of other collaboration with that organization out there as well. So the exhibition of Display Show will merge towards the end of the run of Display Show. It'll merge into the following exhibition, and some of the works will come out of Display Show, but the structures will remain and then support the work of Lina Babardi for the following solo exhibition of Lina Babardi. So
that's what's coming up at that solo exhibition.
Yeah, so that's the next one. So Lena's show continues into March and April after our show. But it means that the way that we work and the models that we come up with, other institutions can learn from those models and introduce that into their own thinking and change the way they perform as an organization by learning from how we work and taking that on board and then adapting it and turning that into their own methodology. And that, for me, is very exciting. So the idea that we make exhibitions, but the exhibitions themselves have propositions and they have policies, they have ways to do things in the future. And that's what our dream is, that other people adopt those ways, use those ways, criticize them, make them better, improve them. And that's the sort of conversation that I'm interested in around the
and
world.
And that is a structural conversation again, isn't it? That's a deep, because I think of artists as institution builders, right? There's artists that start theaters.
Yeah.
There's artists that start small museums that are artists run that then take on a life of its own that continue beyond the artist's lifetime or serve a greater historical purpose or something. But it sounds very much like what you're saying is your artists as, and just correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to be reaching into that, and that's just as institution builders, but as institutional policy influencers of people who build, artists who build institutions. Is that correct?
I feel like as an artist, you should be responsible for how art is displayed and received in the world. You should be attentive to that, and you should propose ways for that. Why would you accept a default system? So the starting point of ESOP projects, in effect, is a very simple proposition. It is to say, can the gallery be an artwork? And is that an ideal situation to experience art in? Because if you're going to experience an artwork, and I have this belief that I've borrowed from John Latham. So John Latham proposed an idea that context is half the work. And so I think if you're going to show an artwork in a gallery, and then you think of that the gallery is half of the work, the thing that you're putting in is only half the work, and the gallery is the other half. Therefore, you need to consider the gallery or the other environment as much as you have spent time on the thing or the sound or the whatever the artwork is that you're putting in there. So we are trying to make a space that is very responsive to that idea. So when we invite an artist to come and work with us, they do something, and that changes what we are, and we do things, and that changes what they are. And that's the exciting part. That's where you get these moments of collaboration and moments of perhaps confusion that lead to interesting new ideas. It's a constant struggle to try and create the gallery as an artwork over time. That's a multiple authorship that's taking place within our space.
I love that, Gavin. Thanks so much for talking to me today. I think it's very exciting what you're doing, and I look forward to hearing more about your projects and upcoming work.
Yeah, thanks very much, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.